Well, they're pulled in, but this time the rings don't carry them to the wood or to Charn, but they are carried instead to a new world. Now, I'll let you try to figure out what that new world is, because I want to go on a slight tangent for a moment. Before I continue the plot, I would like to consider for a moment the characters of Andrew and Jadis. For in these two ruthless Machiavellian villains, Lewis offers a powerful portrait of the Nietzschean Superman. One whose satanic will to power and Faustian lust for knowledge is both boundless and unquenchable. Andrew and Jadis care nothing for the people that they use. You see, they consider themselves to be above bourgeois standards of good and evil. Like Nietzsche, they are above good and evil. They are the Übermann, and they don't care about our standards. They have stepped outside of the Tao, to use Lewis's language. Well, in the novel, Lewis sounds the measure of their utter narcissism and egocentrism. As I already told you, Andrew is willing to sacrifice children to further his occult studies. He doesn't know if they'll come back alive. Jadis, even worse, we learn that she destroyed Charn by speaking the deplorable word. A spell with the power to destroy anything, everything, except the person who speaks the word. You see, this deplorable word, okay, Jadis said the deplorable word. She knew what would happen, but she feels totally justified in what she did because she believes that her people are her possessions. She thinks they belong to her, and therefore she could do anything she wants to them. More of this Superman idea. Not only that, she really thinks that it was her sister's fault because her sister pushed her into saying the deplorable word. So she feels no guilt. She takes no responsibility for her actions. Now, as you might guess, the deplorable word is almost certainly meant to be a reference to the atom bomb. In fact, because remember, it was written in the 50s. In fact, at the end of the novel, Aslan warns Polly and Diggory that the coming Earth century, which is the 20th century, will be one of treachery, deplorable words, and Jadis-like tyranny. And certainly the 20th century has been just that, with the totalitarian rules from the right and from the left. Now, in many ways, this statement at the end of the novel marks the only overtly political statement in the Chronicles. Lewis was interested in general political issues, totalitarianism and whatnot, but Lewis didn't usually have references that specific. In fact, some people don't know this, but Lewis never read the newspaper. He felt it was a waste of time. He always was reading, but he never read the newspaper. And so he tries to stay away from anything that's too overtly political. He kind of stayed out of that, which I think was good for the wideness of his appeal in some ways. But let us come back to the plot. As you might have guessed, our travelers find themselves in the about-to-be-born world of Narnia. And Lewis, in a reworking of Genesis chapter 1, conjures up a breathtakingly beautiful creation. As you might guess, Aslan is the creator. Remember John chapter 1, through him, Jesus, the world was made. So Aslan is the creator, and he literally sings Narnia into creation. It's absolutely beautiful. And as he sings, the stars appear, and then the stars begin to sing. Remember in the book of Job, they talk about the sons of God singing in the sky? I mean, it's a beautiful scene. Now, as you might guess, Diggory, Polly, Frank, and Strawberry are captivated by the song. Even the horse loves the song. In fact, Frank says, if I had heard that music before, I would have been a better man. I can't do Cockney, but he says it in Cockney. He says, I would have been a better man if I had heard that music when I was young. But what do you think Andrew and Jadis think about it? To them, the music is horrible. It's like a brass glove scraping on a chalkboard. They hate the music, and they cover their ears and don't want to hear it. In fact, Jadis's hatred for the music is so intense that she takes... Okay, when they were in London, as a weapon, she had ripped off a piece of a lamppost, made out of metal, of course. Well, she gets so mad at the song, she takes the piece of metal and throws it right at Aslan's forehead to kill him. She doesn't even know who the lion is. Well, of course, the piece of the lamppost bounces off of his head and lands on the ground.